It's time for another retro throwback sidetrack bonus episode of The Hive Jive. This episode, titled Things to Consider, originally aired on Patreon on January 21st of 2021. Enjoy.
Hey, all you Hive Jive junkies out there, it's that time again. Join our hosts, John Swan and Ken Milam, for another bonus edition of The Hive Jive.
I don't know how much of it I'll be able to tackle in this, but Mike had reached out and asked some questions, and I thought it might be prudent to answer some of them here on Patreon. And we'll see. We'll kind of see where it takes us and stuff. But first and foremost, we did have a couple of days. God, I don't even know what day is what now. I think it was last weekend. We had a couple of days that were actually decent and the temperature was warmer. Yeah. So it was was it last week? I thought it was, it had to have been over the weekend. It was like Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
I don't know. It was last week. Yeah, it was Saturday. And we're supposed to have Saturday, Sunday. We're supposed to have it be in the 70s, and then next week we're supposed to be back in the 70s.
Yeah. Temperatures are nice.
Yeah, it's nice. It is. Bees are working the hell out of mistletoe. We've got a lot of mistletoe out, and I mean in fact, I had to reach up and pull off a piece and look at it, and that is the color of pollen that they're coming in. It's kind of a pale green, a light green, and that's the color of the pollen they're taking into the colonies.
Yeah, so for most places where there is mistletoe, it's usually inclement weather or too cold for the bees to take part in it. But down here, we have a lot of mistletoe. And depending on the year, you do have situations like this year, it's warm enough, the bees can take advantage of it. And mistletoe is a huge nectar producer and also
tremendous pollen producer.
Yeah, see, I wasn't necessarily too sure about the pollen aspect of it, but it's definitely a huge nectar producer for sure. It's just that most colonies can't take advantage of it due to those other inclement issues. But right now, though, they can, and they are out looking for stuff. I went out to I managed to look at all of my colonies, your version of front porch beekeeping, look at them.
Oh, it just checks if they're alive. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. I went by, I looked through a couple of observation windows on some of the top bars. I looked at the activity at the front porch or the entrance discs of all of the colonies. Checked the colony on top of the hotel, went through and tested everybody, the ones that I could. I did like a little heft test on to make sure that they still had some weight to them. And everybody is alive. All colonies and nukes at this point are alive. They're all active. They all felt like they had a decent amount in them still for now, but that I'm thinking is going to change because they are also actively looking for pollen. And I got home on Saturday late afternoon and immediately got a phone call, just conveniently coincidence, from the neighboring property over by the main apiary. And she has recently got chickens. Mm-hmm. And she said that the bees were all over her chicken feed. And so I was asking her, I was like, well, you know, what kind of feed did you get? Does it have anything sweet in it? What they're looking for is the protein that they find in the powder. And if you do the pellet form and if you move it around, or only have it out at certain times, things like that, it'll help discourage the bees. But if you just have it in one spot and you're constantly dumping it out there and it's a powder or a scratch, that's going to, be more easy for the bees, more readily available for them to then turn around and say, hey, here's a consistent source that's always there, and they teach the other bees. So she was going to look at switching some of those things up, but I did think it was oddly convenient that I had the one time since October, November that I've been able to actually go look at all the colonies. And as soon as I get home, immediately I get, a message and a complaint. The bees are over here and I just got chickens. And I'm like, okay, well,
your damn chickens eat my bees.
Well, they won't. The chickens will avoid.
I know, but don't.
They have a very healthy respect for, and I did tell her that. that the bees really, when they're foraging, they're not going to bother the chickens. Mm-mm. And there's no hives around there close enough for the bees to be defensive to the chickens. And the chickens have a healthy respect for the bees and will avoid the bees. So hopefully, all in all, it should be good.
Our bees, we feed all the time. Our feeders always got feed in it. And we feed 16% crumbles, and I'm sure that's what she's feeding, or 20% crumbles, laying crumbles. And one time when we first put it out, they were in there tumbling and rolling, my wife said. But since then, they've pretty much quit. They hadn't seen them out there looking around or nothing, so. I guess they're getting enough off of the mistletoe around here. Now, tell me this. Should I put my pollen feeder is empty? Should I put a little pollen in the feeder, or should I just let them find what they want? And that's what they would do anyway. They're going to find native pollen over man-made pollen.
Yeah, I would not. And that was one of the things I was getting ready to say, is that she, you know, was like, well, is there anything you can do? And she's always goes over to the, well, is there anything that we can do to go through and, you know, deter the bees, or make the bees not want to be here or whatever. And so one history lesson, backtracking over, the bees have been there before she ever bought the property. And all of the things that she continues to add and do has been with the knowledge that there are a lot of bees on the 40 acres right next to her 20 or 40 acres that she has. And, you know, so every time she comes up with a new thing, I'm like, this is not, you know, this is not a new thing. You know, they're out there, you know how they behave. And they do forage for, you know, a good distance, and that does encompass her property. So, but you got to try to, you know, be civil with the neighbors anywhere that is and stuff. And so I do try to work with her and go through all that. But one of the suggestions could have been, what if you put out your pollen feeder and, you know, feed them so that they find a higher quality source somewhere else that leads them away from that? And that is a solution, but it's also not a great solution at this time of the year, because we're only halfway through January, almost two thirds of the way through January. And if you start feeding them a consistent high protein source right now, they will start bulking up on brood. And if they start bulking up on brood, their food demands increase as well. And then in February, late February-ish, when we have that random cold streak where it drops down, you know, our coldest temperatures of the year, they will starve and die.
Yep. And especially now that I've got so many Italians, which is what a lot of the commercial guys use, is Italians. And that's why they want to be in Florida, or they want to be in the valley, or they want to be somewhere along the coast where it's warmer. And there's also a lot more green down there, and there's stuff flowering down there. So I guess most of you commercial guys are probably getting ready to head to California if they're not already there.
Yeah. I have been completely out of touch with, you know, the reality of what day of the week it is, let alone the time of the year. And it is coming up on almond pollination season. And I'm sure if I looked and tried, I could find what's really going on. I do know one lady through the Beekeeper Association here in Texas that has gotten her first pollination contract to send bees out there, and she's super excited, but they haven't went yet, I don't believe. But it is, you know, the time is nigh kind of thing. It is very near for that part of the year to kick off. And then after that, you know, it's, especially for the commercial beekeepers anyway, it's go time. You know, they send them out there for the almonds, and then some of them come back to a state like Texas to take a little reprieve, while others, you know, start crisscrossing the states following the blooms of the different plants and the different crops. So you've got your almonds, and then you're going to have your apple orchards and, you know, things along those lines following
some blueberries.
Cherries, blueberries won't, that'll be a little bit later, because blueberries don't bloom until it's warmer out.
The guys I've talked to said blueberries are harder on bees than pretty much anything, right? Than the almonds or any of it, because their areas that they pollinate are the little farms are so small that the farmers don't get along that well. That's what they're telling me. I don't know nothing about it. And so that guy's going to be poisoning when this guy's over here has got bees that are, well, keep your bees on your place.
Yeah. Blueberries, unfortunately, are a heavily chemically treated crop. Mm-hmm. Or you could be nestled between two other farmers that aren't doing blueberries, but do treat with chemicals, and then they get the bees. And mm-hmm. so it is a very hard thing. Unfortunately, a lot of our food and agricultural system is that way, period, where yep. it is heavily chemical based and dependent. And unfortunately, that has negative effects on the environment and the bees and other pollinators and us. And yeah, it's bad all the way around, but that's just kind of how it is, unfortunately.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And all of this happened after World War II and all of these, I won't get into that one. I had a guy on the show the other day that was talking about how so many of the munitions companies became fertilizer companies, because fertilizer basically and gunpowder are damn close to each other. And so they just became fertilizer companies and stay making, man-made fertilizer.
Well, you sugarcoated that one a little bit. It is in the documentary for the pollinators documentary. Mm-hmm. And at that point we had already ventured into chemical warfare. And yep. then when the war was over, we had all these toxic chemicals that we didn't know what to do with. And they turned around and started using them as pesticides, herbicides, yep. and fungicides. Mm-hmm. So that's the reality of that. And for anybody who hasn't seen the Pollinators documentary, go out there and check it out. It has been a wide release since June of 2020, mm-hmm. I believe. So, get out there and check that out. And it'll open up your eyes to some things, hopefully, if you have not already seen it, or you're not really privy to what goes on in the agricultural world and how to go through and have some possible ideas on maybe how to change that. But unfortunately, it's a global change that's needed. You can start small and everybody can do their little part, but it's going to take a food revolution to ever get us where basically, we need to be.
Yep. It's just, that's how we're living nowadays. Just to understand that in 10,000 years from now, they're going to dig you up. All they're going to have to do is hit you with the paddles and bring you back to life. You've been that well preserved.
All the formaldehyde.
Yeah, all the crap, all the stuff that's in our food. Think about this. Take your grapes, your table grapes that you buy at the store. Watch them. The grapes don't go bad, but watch the stems that hold the grapes. They go black, they dry up, they shrivel, and the grapes are still look like grapes. Why? That's all I'll say. Wow.
This is like, most anything that has a preservative in it. Yep. It never grows yep. mold. It doesn't go bad. Yep.
That's it. Yeah. They don't rot.
So you got to go check your bees as well. And you did post a picture because Max had sent the photo over mm-hmm. stating that you wanted proof that you mm-hmm. did open them up and look. And if I remember correctly, all of yours are still alive too, right?
All of mine are in good shape. Even the two hives that I thought would need be combined. Max's hive, he's got the rock hive, and I was worried about the rock hive. I really have been worried about it, and I stayed on him, we need to go open it up. And finally I opened it up. I said, well, yeah, they got plenty of food. I've been feeding them hard. And then my Russians, I went and opened them up. Hell, I got five frames of bees in there, a deep box, and I'm sitting there, wow. And then I got to looking at food. I've got four to five to six frames of, I've got at least five full frames of food, capped food. And I'm sitting there, they're set.
Yeah. If you're at a 50-50 ratio at this time of the year, you're sitting pretty.
And some of them are in a lot better shape than that. Now I got a new swarm across the road on the trailer. I call it the trailer hive. It's a new trailer hive. My old trailer hive, it went away, but the new trailer hive is doing well. They have no mites. They have probably four frames of bees, maybe four and a half frames of bees, but now they do only have 3 to 4 frames of cap food, but I'll take care of that because I got plenty in the freezer, deep frames that are capped. So that'd be good. But everything's good. One bunch over at Rick's, the new swarm that I put in there and requeened it with a Italian queen is good. Now they only had about two or three frames of food in an 8-frame box. So I'm going to take 3 frames over there and put in there, and they'll be in good shape. And I think all of my bees are in good. Now the top bars are doing well, and I didn't open them up because I did the front porch look. They both had bees going in and out, and I says, yeah, that looks good. I didn't want to open them up because the next day it was going to get cold and rainy. I says, I'm not going to bust the propolis on them, but they were still alive. That's all I can say.
Well, that's good. That's definitely good. So switching over here, we did get an email. I was saying from Mike, and Mike had, he titled it, I could use a little advice, and he's got 3 separate points or topics in here. And I'm going to go ahead and talk about the first one, today on this bonus episode. And then the other 2 will actually end up being future episodes on the main segment and on our Monday shows. And, those will be things that are kind of in the works. One of them was already anyway, but the other one will add to it. So his questions in a nutshell revolve around expanding an apiary or finding additional apiary sites. And then the prospect of doing hive management services for other people and the prospect of doing removals, live removals of bees. And so we will talk about how to kind of set up hive management services and how you could potentially, you know, host hives or manage hives for other individuals as a main segment episode down the road. And we're already in the works on some episodes for bee removals. I was going to have Jorge come in and do an episode with you and I and discuss kind of some of his things that he's learned, the pros and cons of it and all of that jazz. And then there will also be, you know, like some follow-up either carrying over into a bonus episode or a potentially a deeper dive episode here on Patreon that we'll go through in depth on bee removal as well. And, or that, you know, that may end up just being 3 main segment episodes. I'm not really sure, but we will definitely be covering that this season. So Mike, if you are listening, I will respond to your email itself here. Hopefully I meant to respond to it 2 days ago, and, I will try to get back around and get that done here in the next day or two and get you these answers so that you'll have them in a timely fashion. But first of all, his first question here, he says, there is no question in my mind that I will outgrow my backyard this year. I will have to find some other places to keep my bees or sell some bees or both. So how do I go about finding new apiary sites? What criteria should I use when considering what site to choose? And are there any pitfalls in dealing with the property owners, et cetera? Would potentially a host a hive program also be an option? So those are these scenarios that he's kind of looking at there. And number one, I would say go back to the very beginning of season 1 of the show and find the episode that is titled Choosing Your Hive Site or Hive Location. And that right there is going to talk about some of the overarching and kind of higher level things. But when you're going through and you're looking at stuff like that, you know, from a beekeeper standpoint, and this is a kind of a double-edged sword or a hypocritical way to look at things. Double standard. That's the word I'm looking for. It's a double standard. Go. From the beekeeper side of things, when you are looking to place hives on another property because you need the room and you need the space, then you want to try to find the best solution for you, which is preferably the least costly or free, ultimately. If you can get by with putting hives on a location and the only negotiating tool is I will give you a couple of jars of honey or a percentage of honey, I definitely would recommend, if it is going to go that route, to talk in terms of percentages, because you never know what year is going to be a bountiful year and what year is not, and what other things may happen. So if you promise that somebody's going to get 100 pounds of honey and you don't make 100 pounds of honey, you can be in trouble. But if you promise that you will give somebody 10% of the honey produced from a colony, well, then no matter how much or how little there is, you can still siphon off 10% of that as your payment towards that landowner. So that's one thing to kind of keep in mind and have there. The other concept is, and the reason I said that this is, you know, kind of that flip-flop of a double standard is because if someone else is coming to you looking for you to put bees on their property because, say, they want, for instance, an ag exemption, but they have no desire to be the beekeeper themselves, and you're going to be doing all the work, and especially if it is your bees, they're getting a huge tax break from that, and that should never be a free service for them. They are not doing you a favor. You are doing them the service, and they should pay you for that. And that is in complete contradiction to what I just said a moment ago, which is why I said there is a double standard here. It's a little bit hypocritical, but that's kind of how you have to look at things from those standpoints. So from the standpoint of, I started off, I have hives in my backyard. Suddenly I have way more hives than I know what to do with, or, you know, I'm going to need to do splits and it's going to potentially grow by a third or a half. You know, what do I do? Try to find areas where, if you can, there's not heavy agriculture in the vicinity that is going to have negative effects. Like we were just talking about earlier, you know, try not to put it beside an orchard that, you know, for a fact treats everything with seven dust or seven spray, you know, because that will be very detrimental to your bee colonies. And if you can find a location that does have a natural water source, be it a pond or some sort of water tank, that, you know, is not going to be a hindrance to the property owner if the bees are there drinking, then that is also a positive to yourself, because if not, you're going to be lugging water out there to that site because your bees have to have water. And if they spend all of their energy and resources flying 2 miles to get water and fly it back, that reduces the effectiveness of your colony and reduces the lifespan of your foragers, because they're spending all their time trying to bring in this vital resource, and it's a lot of wear and tear on their body. So having a water source nearby is a good thing. All of the standard things that you're going to find in that first episode talking about having the northern or western wind block and or shade. If you're in an area like Mike, for instance, is in an area where it does get cold and there's a lot of wind and things like that. So you would want to make sure that you've got that northern wind block. And if that can be a natural tree line or something, that would be great. You want southern exposure and eastern exposure, but you might want westerly shade if you're in an area where it gets really warm. And also, you know, it's going to depend on what type of hive you have too. If you're doing a Langstroth versus a top bar is going to need more shade earlier in the day. Langstroth doesn't necessarily have to have shade, but it does reduce the amount of work that the bees have to do. So all of these little things are what you kind of take into consideration. The other things that you need to take into consideration are, again, things like we've already talked about at the beginning of the show. What are the neighbors, or what is the property owner? What do they do? What do they have on their land? Is there things that the bees are going to potentially be interested in, like the livestock feed? You've got the gentleman out there by you, Ken, that has the pigs. And we did the moral dilemma episode about him blowtorching the feed troughs to kill all the bees because there were so many bees that he thought the pigs were going to get injured. You know, the lady next door to my main apiary on her 40 acres of land has chickens now, and she doesn't have very many, and it's not a big thing, but the bees are actively looking for that protein. And so now they're in her feeder. So you've got to kind of keep these things in mind. Is the property owner that you're going to have the bees on their land, do they have a garden? Do they have an orchard? Is it going to be beneficial to them? Because if it is, then maybe you don't have to negotiate as much with the honey aspect. Maybe it can be, hey, I give you literally a couple jars of honey and they pollinate all your stuff, and then you get a bountiful harvest that you wouldn't have had otherwise. Do the neighbors on either side adjacent to where you're going to put the bees have the water source that perhaps the bees could utilize and it's nearby? Or do they have a garden or an orchard, you know? Or is it a barren desert? Because that is another thing that more times than not comes into play with people that want you to put bees on their land for an ag exemption. Their land may be inhospitable to bees. There may be no native natural food sources out there for the bees, or there may be a very, very limited amount that only blooms at a certain time of the year. And if that's the case, you're going to spend all of your time carting sugar water out there to feed your bees, and you will never get a honey harvest, and you're going to just be literally feeding them to survive, to stay alive. And that's it. So all of those types of things are what you would want to keep into consideration whenever you are thinking about putting bees in other locations. You know, drive around, look at the area, look at the bloom cycles, Hopefully, if you've been living in that area for a while, you might already have a good idea of, man, you know, there's this property, kind of like you can, and my directions are going to be all screwed up from where you're at. But on the other side of the main highway, when we drove off that direction, two years ago, it was just a sea of flowers out there. And so that's one of those things where you're like, man, it's literally flowers for as far as the eye can see. There's no agriculture out there that is going to be treated with any type of pesticides or anything like that. You know, if I can make friends with that landowner, and if you don't know them, figuring out who they are could be the trick as well. But if you can make friends with that landowner and say, hey, would you be interested in potentially allowing me to put two or three hives out here? And then I give you, you know, X amount of percentage of honey from those hives every year, because you've got this beautiful landscape and these beautiful flowers. Like, that's the best case scenario. Assuming again, there's water out there.
Oh, there's water. It's running creeks on that piece of property. And
well, yeah, for you, you live at a damn lake. There's water everywhere.
I live in a lake. Yeah. There's water everywhere where I'm at. You're talking about food here. Max is doing some studying on flowers. You know, here, one of the big things in the spring is the Indian blankets, not the paintbrush, the Indian blankets, you know, the round sombreros with, you know what I'm talking about. And, you know, that's a perennial. He found where he found the seeds to make them annual, where they're, say, perennial. Is perennial come up every year? Annual comes up on the seeds every year. Which one is? Oh, he found where it comes up from the roots every year, from a bulb it puts in, and it's called a blanket.
And
it looks just, and it's called an Indian blanket. It's not an Indian paintbrush. It's an Indian blanket.
Well, you know those different flowers, right?
Oh yeah.
Because the Indian paintbrush is the Indian paintbrush, and the Indian blanket
is not, and it's not a bee thing.
What is it?
It doesn't make
it wrong. Gerardium, Gilardia.
Yeah, it doesn't make Gilardia? It doesn't make nectar. It might make pollen. It doesn't make nectar.
Well, no. See, the Indian blanket does make. That is your primary nectar source out here for us.
Yeah.
The Indian paintbrush, we had somebody tell us, did not. But then talking to some other people, I found that in their area, the bees do go to it because it is the only thing that they have. Okay. And they don't have all these other blue bonnets, and they don't have, you know, because like for us, when the Indian paintbrush comes up, blue bonnets are already in full bloom, and you've already got some Indian blanket coming in. You've got a whole bunch of other little kind of minor wildflowers that are out there. And so our bees ignore the Indian paintbrush. But I was told by a beekeeper of many years that in their area, the bees do go and visit the Indian paintbrush. So, you know, a lot of times it has to do with what's available, because there may be something that is subpar or something that is not as appealing to them, and they will ignore it if there's a bountiful source of anything else that they like better. But if it's the only option, then they will go to it.
Yep. So, but you can buy a lot of seed. You can buy goldenrod. Our soil is not good for goldenrod. Our soil is a sandy, and you need that black clay like y'all have down there.
God, yeah, the whole farm is nothing but clay. And the whole farm is nothing but Indian blanket in the fall.
Yeah.
Well, I just said that wrong, and you agreed with me. The whole farm is nothing but goldenrod in the fall.
Yeah. We have plenty of Indian blanket, but this is a perennial that you know will come up. It doesn't have to, you know, the seeds don't have to germinate. It comes up from the roots. So he's going to plant some. We're going to see what it does. And we can keep you posted next couple of years on that. So we'll go from there. But he's getting all interested again in he's working bees, and he's got one bunch. He's got honey set out and thawed out. He's going to put in one. Now he says it's supposed to warm up tomorrow or Friday, and the rock hive he's going to put in a 5-frame nuke. He's moving everything into a 5-frame nuke like you told him.
Yeah, I think that's the best case scenario, because if they're so small that they can't guard the space that they've got, and there's only a couple of frames of bees, and you know, the excess honey and things like that is starting to mold and mildew because they can't regulate the temperatures and the humidity inside the colony. Mm-hmm. Putting them into a 5-frame nuke and just doing, you know, 2 or 3 frames with the bees and the other 2 or 3 frames with the honey and call it good. That's the best case scenario for them.
Yep. The cows did knock it over too. That's one of the reasons I figure the honey mildewed. Yeah.
But we're right, so there, we're gonna roll that back into things to consider. Is there cattle you loose on the land? If so, do you mind the expense of actually putting up a cattle fence or cattle paneling all the way around the area that the hives are going to be? Or for some of our listeners who are in areas where there are bears, are there known bears loose nearby where they met loose? Because, you know, they're all not, my brain is mush. Yeah. Are there bears known to be nearby that could come over and decide that that would be a good forage spot? And if so, are you willing to spend the money to put up an electric fence and have the solar charger and all that stuff for it? Those are two other great things to keep in mind. Deer, not so much. Skunks, unfortunately, is going to be a reality. Even in town, you can run into skunks. But cattle like to rub against things and they will knock it over. And bears obviously like to tear things up and eat them, like our last little conversation with the top bar hive that turned into bear popsicles. Bees on a stick.
Honey on a stick. One thing that you can do is put your 2x4 between the two, if you're putting them on cinder blocks, and wrap a ratchet strap down, pull it down, tie the cinder blocks in. The cattle doesn't seem to bother them that way, because they're bottom heavy. The cinder blocks hold them down.
It doesn't prevent the cow from scratching on it. All it does is just make the hive hopefully not come apart or hopefully not fall over. But that doesn't mean that the cow can't knock the whole thing over on its side too.
Well, which they can knock it over
in the wintertime can be just as big of a problem as the boxes coming apart. So yeah, that's, you know, it's just not a, it is not a good combination. Cattle and bees are not a good combination.
Not at all.
Also, completely unrelated, but not in the same token, beehives near horse enclosures are not a good combination, because horses, be they beautiful, majestic, intelligent animals, have a flaw that cattle do not have. When a bee stings a cow, the cow runs away. When a bee stings a horse, the horse starts stomping and thrashing its tail about, which incites more stinging. And in situations down here, I have been privy to 2 different removals that have had to been done where bees killed a horse because the horse was in an enclosure. The horse was stomping and thrashing and, you know, with us and our redheaded mutts, Scutellata genetics, Apis mellifera Scutellata genetics, the bees overwhelmed the horse and the horse died. So again, keeping these things in mind, you don't, you know, you might think that it'd be great to put bees on your neighbor's property, but if your neighbor has these things that are going to be an issue, you don't want your neighbor suing you because their dog or their chickens or their horse or their cattle were injured because of your bees. So open prairie land is obviously the best case scenario. Not everybody can necessarily find that, but that's the end all be all best scenario that you can come up with. Yipper skipper. And like I said, those other things that you had on there, Mike, we will get to those in a main segment episode, but I will get you an email, sir, with a little bit more detailed answers, so that you can go through and check that out as well. So, and I think that wraps up another bonus episode for us for January, sir.
There you go.
There you go. So, you know what
we want to tell everybody bye.
I started this. We can tell them bye in just a second. I don't know actually how long this episode is because the recording has been going for over 45 minutes, but there was easily 10 minutes of nothing at the beginning while I was waiting on you to log in. You were not walking the dog.
Yeah, I had walking dog. Had set everything up real quick when I saw, 6 o'clock. Oh, I can get it. Yeah, it was 6 o'clock then. I got it all set up.
No, it's all good. But so this may have been, you know, maybe a 30-minute episode. I'm not honestly sure, but we will call it good. I have limited windows at the moment where I can try to pull this off. And so far the house has not exploded and I don't hear screaming through the walls at the moment. I did when we first started though.
Yeah. Everything's so wonderful.
Everything's peachy. Just peachy.
Yep.
All right, sir. Well, I look forward to maybe someday in another life being able to see you in person and do a real recording in our, you know, I'm even looking forward to the high studio at this point.
Well, we won't talk about it now, but I know we have. I've got some colonies, and I know I said I was going to raise big colonies, but I got some big colonies. And I mean, big now. What are they going to be like in spring? I'm going to pile a bunch of mediums on top of them.
Yeah, exactly. You pile a bunch of mediums on there and you make yourself a ton of honey.
That's going to make some honey. I've got I've got two doubles full of bees over there. I opened two of them up and I'm sitting there. Wow. I mean, they were full of bees. Now that was, I just checking. And I mean, yeah, two doubles full, both, I mean, 16 frames, and I couldn't believe that. I'm sitting there, and they got food like, wow. I'm sitting there, these are going to be in good shape.
No, those, that's good. Those are the ones that turn into the colonies like I've posted pictures of before where I've got, you know, 6-7 boxes on top of a colony, and yeah, those are the colonies that do it. Those are the ones that get you that powerhouse because they have the bees to expand, and they can draw the wax, and they can draw the comb, and they can just do amazing things.
Oh, they're going to. Wow.
That's big, strong, healthy colonies all the way.
Yep. Yep. That'll work.
All right, sir. Well, ta-ta.
Family, y'all be good. Thank you so very much for, and I hope we help you. I hope we brought a smile to your face. Keep the shiny side up and the rubber side down, and family. Yep. Everything's wonderful here. We got to get out of here. Thank y'all, family. Appreciate everything. And John, my prayers are with you, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Be good, everybody. Be safe. And we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This Hive Jive production was made possible by amazing patrons like you. And we appreciate your support. To all our Hive Jive junkies out there, you truly are the bee's knees.